Hello there, boxing fans around the world. Thank you for joining me once again here on Talk and Fight for another episode of Boxing News Headlines, the place where I go around the world scouring those headlines, giving me the stories from around the boxing world, from various circles, various places. And today we're going to start off with a story emanating out of Las Vegas, where we're going to see William Zepeda and Maxie Hughes go toe-to-toe. Undefeated knockout machine. William Zepeda, 29-0, 25 knockouts. And his opponent, former IBO belt holder Maxie Hughes, 26-6-2, hosted a press conference in Las Vegas prior to their collision, expected to be broadcast around the world on DAZN. Said Zepeda at this presser, "I know Maxie Hughes is a great opponent, and that's why we're fighting him. And I'm just thankful with my teammates, my team, my father, all my people from where I trained every single day for this fight. I want to thank Golden Boy. I want to thank Eric and thank everybody for being here. I'm ready for everyone in the lightweight division." Okay. Maxie was a little more subtle, I suppose. "So very happy to be here. I'm here because of merit. The IBF have ordered me and William to fight. So, you know, both of us are here on merit. Because we're the best next people in mind going forward. You know, William, we've watched him, and we know what he's about. And we've shown him that respect in our preparation. My team down here have put the working day in, day out, and on Saturday night, we'll get that win and be a step closer to a world title." He continues, "I fought and defeated a similar guy to Zepeda in Giovanni Stefan, a Southpaw Mexican, came forward. Big puncher, but I'm well prepared mentally, physically for what Zepeda is going to bring. What's interesting for here on Talk and Fight is the undercard, in particular the fight between Floyd Schofield and Estereo Suaro in the lightweight division. Also, Schofield's record is 16-0. Mike Gore over Knuckle Up on Talk and Fight has talked about him often. And we're looking forward to seeing Schofield fight again. Schofield turned pro in 2020, the year we went on the air, I believe. 3 years ago. Yep. The 21-year-old beat Pedro Vicente Charbay for the NABF Junior Super Featherweight title. He won four fights in 2023, his last contest being a technical knockout win over Ricardo Lopez Torres back in December. So he's primed. He's ready to go. He's one of the best up-and-coming lightweights. And let's see how he does against Suaro. Let's move along to the undercard of the Keith Thurman Tim Siu card. Let's see, taking place. We see Rolando Rolly Romero and Isaac Pitbull Cruz exchanging words. Said Romero, "If you want to come at me and get cracked, then that's good. Like I said, he can do that shit with all them little dudes with no power or all that other stuff with broken-handed opponents and all that. I'm a big boy, and I'm the hardest puncher you've ever been with. Or he's ever going to be with in the ring because I'm the hardest hitter at my weight class." To which Cruz replied, "I don't care. I just do my own thing. And he's never fought against someone who's as aggressive as I am neither." Said Romero, "I find those in Las Vegas all the time. He's not that unique. He's just a come-forward dude that doesn't stop throwing punches. This has honestly probably been the easiest sparring I've ever tried in my life. So what I really want to know is how you're going to find sparring for me, because you can't replicate me. You can't replicate him. You can't replicate me." Whatever. To which Pitbull replied, "It's not a hard thing at all to find people like him to spar with. What? Cowards? Don't really like the fight? I can't find that anywhere." To which Romero replied, "I'm being called a coward. I don't think I've heard anyone say that to me before. But like I said, we'll see who the real coward is on March 30th. Like I said, all I got to do is crack him once or twice, and then he's not going to come forward no more." Fair enough. Short, sweet, and simple, so to speak. Okay. Joe Koizumi out of Japan is reporting on an interesting tournament held between four Japanese fighters and four fighters from Korea. Co-promoted by Hideyuki Ohashi, who is the manager of Naoya Inoue. And anyway, he's strongly supporting the restoration of the Korean and Japanese. I guess it was a bit of a, what do they call it? Oh, you know, when two guys are, you know, Oh, gosh. Words escape me right now. Where they hate each other. And they go at it. Anyway, Korea versus Japan historically has been a hotbed. And right now it looks like Japanese fighters and Korean fighters are getting in the ring together. And they had a tournament the other day, as I said. So let's have a quick look here what Joe has to say. Unbeaten Japanese JBC number 6 super welter, Yosumi Soda, 6-0-1. Finally caught up with the gamely galloping Korean Yong-in Jo and halted him with the referee's intervention at 2 minutes 16 seconds of the 8th and final round. Jo made a good start and dominated the first 2 sessions, but Soda took back the initiative until he finally battered him nearly at will prior to the ref's stoppage. The much taller Japanese southpaw, Shunpei Kaneshiro, 2-0, formerly an amateur boxer with 41 contests, kept whipping Korean Jin Young Kim all the way en route to a shutout decision over 6 rounds. Japanese welterweight Tagai Kauto scored a quick knockout with a beautiful shot to the temple of Korean Dong Young Kang at 133 of the first round in a scheduled 6-rounder. Only one Korean victor was heavyweight Jung Soo Kim, who exploded a vicious right hook against Japan's Yamato Fujinaka and finished him for the count at 2 minutes 47 seconds of the second round in a scheduled 6-rounder. Both were beer-barreled warriors, says Joe, swinging roundhouse shots at each other. Though Japan was victorious over Korea by 3-1 this particular night, Korean visitors fought very gamely, and the audience at the hall highly praised their fighting spirits. So some good stuff out of Japan once again. Now let's talk in general about boxing fans, shall we? It's a great little story that I found on boxingnews24.com, written by Eric Coronado Jr. It's a lengthy one. I won't read all of it, but he first of all describes boxers in general. Boxers are intriguing people, he says. For the most part, they lead disciplined lives, many abstaining from drugs or alcohol. Emphasis on the word many, I suppose. They become masters of their bodies, learning about nutrition, exercise, and discipline in ways that most people never begin to understand. They train day in, day out until their moment arrives. We wrap their hands, lace up their gloves, send them into battle with only 2 hands to strike with, and they do their best to set traps, split guards, and use those same weapons to guard and parry with. Many people go their entire lives without ever experiencing a liver shot or having their equilibrium disrupted. Most people become extremely anxious at the thought of conflict, yet just as a runner ties their shoes and goes for a jog, a boxer will lace up their gloves and have a spar. It is a captivating, thrilling, and beautiful sport. Boxing fans, on the other hand, are some of the most downright rotten and scummy individuals on the planet. Fanboys in particular, who spend their days discrediting fighters because they believe that this will somehow be a boon to their idols, attempt to run any fair and even-handed conversation about a fight into the ground. So, here are the 3 worst kind of boxing fans. Number 1, the race pushers. This is probably the most prominent conversation jacker on forums today. This person will turn any conversation about boxing into a conversation about race. They refuse to support or give credit to any fighter who isn't the same race, color, or ethnicity as them. And believe me, these haters come from every background imaginable. Boxing is a tremendously international and inclusive sport. Additionally, because of the nature of the sport in which competitors must fight, at around the same size, it is clear to see that no particular race has any advantage because that's not how the human species works. Fighters all bleed the same, and most fighters do not care about what the color of the person across from them is. They just get in there and do their job. Fans ruin engaging dialogue by centering conversations on non-factors like the race of the fighters, the promoters, or the commentators. People who choose to focus on race rather than accomplishments typically have a shallow understanding of the sport in general, but they are great at dragging others into their muck and creating a situation where it is uncomfortable to voice any opinions on particular fighters. Secondly, he says, the boys who cry wolf. Boxing scoring is subjective. It always has been. While robberies exist in boxing, we do ourselves a disservice by calling every decision that doesn't go our way a robbery. Many times, the simple fact of the matter is that boxing fans are too sensitive to take a loss, even when there's a fighter they're supporting makes no excuses. I've written at length about the plethora of excuses that Spence fans made over the one-sided beating that he received from Crawford, even as Spence himself refused to make any. Now, you know, Inoue has been accused of using steroids with absolutely no substantive report other than the fact he's running through everyone in and around his weight class. One would think that in boxing of all sports, one would grow to accept that many times in a sport with two participants, the guy you're backing has to lose. Calling every instance of this occurring a robbery only muddies the waters and diminishes the effect of the actual robberies and shady happenings, such as Romero versus Barrasso, when they occur. In short, save it for when it matters, rather than trying to make it matter to save face. Finally, the experts. This covers the person who's never set foot in a boxing ring, but is absolutely convinced that the body shot wasn't that bad. They're positive that the shot directed on the chin wasn't hard enough to put someone down. This person will claim that every fighter who loses was exposed, that this fighter is afraid of that fighter. Listen, most of these fighters that we see on TV have been boxing since they were in their single digits. Fear of contact isn't something that really registers in the same way that we might with you, that it might with you or me. When it comes to fear of losing, most of the time, their promoters handle that responsibility. High-level fighters must be masters of their emotions, and this includes fear. Being an armchair expert often goes hand in hand with being a conspiracy theorist who claims that something looked off or someone got paid. Most of the time, this is outright baloney meant to cover their tracks when they back the wrong fighter. Rather than acknowledge that anything can happen in a boxing ring, they choose to promote propaganda so that their expertise isn't undermined. Again, these are also the guys who will shout from the mountaintops that anytime a fighter loses, they've been exposed. Anyway, the writer goes on. It's a very lengthy article. I encourage you to have a read. I put a link on the YouTube description. It's titled The Three Worst Kinds of Boxing Fans. As I said, written by Eric Coronado Jr. Good little article. I encourage you to give it a read. Let's move along to Tyson Fury and the WBC. Looks like Tyson Fury, who defends his WBC belt in undisputed world heavyweight title fight against IBF, WBA, and WBO unified champ Oleksandr Usyk over in Saudi Arabia, May 18th. It looks like Cuba's Frank Sanchez, who is set to face Ajit Kabayal in a fight to decide a future challenger. It looks like Fury might be ordered to fight Frank Sanchez. Frank Sanchez will take the quickest route to a heavyweight world title fight against Tyson Fury if he overcomes Ajit Kabayal in a WBC eliminator. The Cuban can edge closer to a shot at Fury, the WBC heavyweight champ, after an impressive seventh-round knockout of Junior Fa in Saudi Arabia on the Anthony Joshua versus Otto Wallen undercard in December. On the same bill, Kabayal inflicted a short stoppage on Arslanbek Mahmudov in the fourth round, and now the two unbeaten contenders have been ordered to fight for the opportunity to challenge Fury. For our part, we are 100% trying to make the fight versus Kabayal, Sanchez co-manager Mark Barrio told Sky Sports. Both fighters had fantastic performances in Saudi Arabia, so it's a natural fight to make with the added bonus of the eliminator being called by the WBC. I know PBC Premier Boxing Champions would stage the fight in the U.S., but wherever it ultimately lands, it'll be a good one. This is likely the quickest route to a world title for both fighters. Kabayal looked magnificent against Mahmudov, but Frank wants to be world champion, so he's willing to face a tough challenge in Kabayal first. Anthony Joshua has reiterated his desire to fight Fury after demolishing Francis Ngannou inside two rounds in Saudi Arabia last Friday. Fury firstly must come through an undisputed world title fight against Usyk, as I said, May 18th, Saudi Arabia. But WBC President Mauricio Suleiman has welcomed a future Fury versus Joshua fight. The WBC was presented a sanction request, which was to fight the undisputed. The WBC accepted that sanctioning, and we accepted the rematch they have requested, Suleiman told Sky Sports. But if it is not anything to do with contractual promotion, we would absolutely accept the winner to fight Joshua. The WBC has been very much attentive to this matter, so we have completely freed the ground for an undisputed for a rematch and for another fight of that level. The WBC position right now is very open to support the undisputed champion taking on the fights that the fans want to see. And speaking of Tyson Fury and Mauricio Suleiman, It looks like Suleiman wants there to be six judges for this fight against Yusik rather than the usual three. And he's even launched an emergency petition to get the radical proposal passed through. That includes Suleiman contacting rival organizations, the IBF, WBA, and WBO, as well as other parties involved in the fight to get them on board. Various big fights have been marred in controversy regarding judges' scorecards, such as Fury's win over Francis Ngannou and Josh Taylor's controversial victory over Jack Catterall. By the way, a sidebar here, did you hear that Josh Taylor has been injured again, and so his upcoming fight against Catterall has been delayed once more? Did I speak about William Zepeda? William Zepeda is confident of his victory over Maxie Hughes. In their 12-round headliner this Saturday, Zepeda versus Hughes will be shown on DAZN at the Chelsea at the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas. Zepeda can't help but look past the 34-year-old Hughes toward a title shot against WBC lightweight champ Shakur Stevenson or WBA regular champion Gervonta Davis. Caroline Dubois. Let's talk about some women's boxing for a sec. Caroline Dubois is waiting for the outcome of a potential third fight between Katie Taylor and Chantal Cameron before she can determine her next move. Her promoter, Ben Shalom of Boxer, S-B-O-X-X-E-R, expects her fight for a version of the lightweight world title. Taylor remains the undisputed champion and has even identified her likely opponent. But while Taylor's next move remains unclear, so too does Dubois'. The 23-year-old from London, according to Shalom, will fight in June, potentially on the card of the sought-after fight between Joshua Buatsi and Anthony Yard. The Taylor-Cameron trilogy, the third fight, seems inevitable until early in March when Cameron casts doubt on her rival's intentions, in turn keeping the possibility open of Taylor returning to lightweight for her next fight after successive dates at super lightweight with Cameron. Shalom also insists that regardless of his position as a promising Dubois promoter, he also wants to see Taylor and Cameron again fight. Now we'll see what happens there. Looks like we've got another fight to report. Rian Dixon takes on Karen Carabajal, yep, for the WBO World Lightweight title. That'll be happening on April 13th. Speaking of upcoming fights, looks like Emmanuel Navarrete, 38-1-1, will take on Dennis Berinchuk, 18-0, in San Diego, May 18th, in the United States. At stake in the meeting will be the vacant belt of the world champion under the WBO lightweight division. And we can also add that Navarrete has already been champion of that flyweight, featherweight, and bantamweight divisions. And a potential win would give him championship status in a four-weight limit. Very good for him. All righty, let's have a quick look and see. Oh, that's I've already reported on Josh Taylor and Jack Catterall, so we'll just skip that one. But I want to conclude with a rather peculiar story. How about this? Ryan Garcia, what is up with this guy? Okay. The Golden Boy star, who has not stopped posting on social media manically in at least a couple of weeks, caused controversy once again. Fears over his mental state intensified for a third time as he embarked on pounding the streets and asking passersby if they supported pedophiles. If they didn't answer the question quickly, Garcia would say they supported the practice. It was shocking to watch. And the fact Golden Boy boss Oscar De La Hoya chooses to ignore the behavior is even worse. Broadcasters DAZN continue to post only good footage of Garcia, and they too do not address the comments made in the posts. This is according to worldboxingnews.net, if you want more info. Fans are highly concerned about the well-being of Garcia, who has been unhinged for some time now. Garcia's behavior has been off the chain since his press tour with Haney that took place, one presser in New York and one in Los Angeles. And Haney initially stated Garcia was acting to drum up support for the fight, but in later exchanges, Haney changed his mind and agreed with most of those witnessing the meltdown. So World Boxing News has called for the fight to be canceled for the last fortnight after Garcia released a video of himself in between those press conferences, smoking and drinking. Former world champion Ishay Smith agrees that something must be done. He asked, at what point do people start taking Garcia seriously and realize something is wrong with his mental health? Since the first red flags, Garcia has promised to leave social media until after the fight on more than one occasion. Late on Thursday, it happened again, though. Whether that lasts is highly doubtful, as Garcia hasn't been able to wean himself off any platform whatsoever. Throw in your comments. Let me know what you think. Is Ryan Garcia going to continue this rather mad streak he's on or not? Anyway, thanks for joining me here on Talking Fight. Appreciate it. Remember to like, share, subscribe, hit that notification bell. And we'll see you again at 11 a.m. Eastern Time as I'll give you another show featuring headlines from around the world. Thanks.